Welcome to the After's Lockdown Podcast with your hosts, Taylor and Robbie.
Hello, Robbie.
Hey, Taylor. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Very, very good. Looking forward to After's trivia tonight.
Oh my gosh, so excited. I still have to find a team. Okay, so that's going to happen in the past, but right now what we've done this week is we interviewed the wonderful Maddie Wilson, which we're super excited to share. So that's coming up, but let's quickly talk about what we've been doing this week in a bit. What have you been up to?
So I've been obviously getting things together for After's Trivia Night and also trying to work out my D&D character sheet because I'm going to start playing D&D with the After's team and the libraries that are coming up next week. And I've always wanted to give it a shot, so I've been researching and asking some people more knowledgeable than myself. Shout out to Linus Ferris in year three for his wonderful advice trying to figure out who I'm going to play as.
I'm so jealous. I miss that workshop that the library did. I definitely have to see if they've recorded it in some kind of way because I've never played D&D before, but some of my family do, and it's something I've always been a bit like, oh, I should look into that, but also a little bit nervous about. It seems tricky. I want to be part of a team. I want to be part of a trivia team, a D&D team.
Well, I got so excited about it because I'd never had the gateway drug into it. You know, I was obviously a big nerd in high school and still am, but I think I was just friends with the wrong type of nerds. I didn't have D&D friends. I had Star Wars friends.
Speaking of, I've really been getting into Star Wars lately, but that's a totally different thing. What about watching? I've been obsessed the past couple of weeks watching The Secret She Keeps. It's so addictive. And I'm like waiting every week for it to come out. The last few episodes must be coming up now. It's so dark and addictive. I'm really getting into it.
I've been saving it to binge because I know that appointment viewing, I don't have the patience for it anymore.
Me too. I struggle with this so much and I'm so frustrated, but I just like wanted to watch. I was like, I'll just watch an episode, see what it's like. And then I watched all of it and I'm eagerly awaiting the next episodes. And the other thing I've been watching, which has been so much fun, is I watched the first episode of ABC's At Home Alone Together, which is just so silly and so much fun, and I definitely recommend. It's like got some bits that are super funny and some bits that are like but I think there's a lot in there depending, you know, what you find funny.
The same sort of thing I've been checking out on Stan. They've got the Australian Comedians in Lockdown series, the name of which is
Katie,
and it's really funny.
Definitely have to check that out. All right, well, we'll put all of that up in the show notes, but we should probably get into it. We've got an amazing bumper episode ahead with our interview with Maddie Wilson.
Yeah, this was so much fun and she has such amazing advice and is another great film industry citizen.
Awesome. All right, away we go.
Right on.
So today we're super excited. We are chatting with Maddie Wilson, who I got to meet when I was working on The Invisible Man, and Maddie was Lee's director's assistant. We have lots of questions from you. Welcome, Maddie.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Welcome.
Robbie and Taylor.
Yay.
So to kick things off, welcome to the show. And we have some wonderful questions from our lovely BA students. But first of all, I wanted to ask, what made you want to work in the film industry?
What a question. I actually was trying to figure that out the other day because I was like, when did this all start? Because I have this memory of when I was 8 years old and I just decided that I wanted to be a film director. And I don't know where it came from, actually, but it started then. I must have watched Singing in the Rain or something like that, where, you know, how it shows the back lot of a film studio. I was like, that's where I want to be.
That's awesome.
I had the exact same thing around about 10. And like, since you figured that out, did you ever deviate from that?
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm like, why do I want to be something that seems so unachievable for lots of people? But in the end, the love of it draws you back every time. Actually studied construction project management for 2 years, left that behind and came back to it. So it's always been there.
Yeah. And it's so funny actually how studying something else or working in some area, ultimately it kind of influences how you feel about film anyway. It never feels like anything time's been wasted because it somehow all applies, especially to story.
I swear I've had like 25, 30 jobs in my life and each one of them I'm like, oh, there's a moment that I might be able to use. Ooh, there's a character I might be able to use. And so even like construction project management, time management, budget, schedules, everything that you learn will come back into film in some way or another.
And so Maddie, what's really awesome for you right now, your sort of aspirations and what you're doing is working as a director and studying to be a director. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're up to right now?
I was working on another feature film as part of the crew, which got shut down. So we have to be creative, don't we? So I'm lucky that I have a housemate who is an aspiring DOP. So we have been kind of collaborating. We've only shot one little tiny short so far, but it's good to have someone to bounce ideas off in that way. I've got pictures everywhere, just all in my study kind of influencing me. So if I think of an idea, I can get into it and write it down. And as well as that, I'm studying acting part-time. So I'm trying to upskill at the same time as developing my own projects while I have the time.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. And I think that really is the same as working in other jobs. But, you know, if you're to continue working as a director and upskilling in that area, learning something like performance and acting is actually hugely influential to directing.
Definitely. And I think now more than ever, it's good to have a range of skills in your back pocket.
Yeah, absolutely.
So between uni and coming to this specific job, what have you done along the way?
Many, many things. I mean, when I finished uni, I did go overseas for a brief time to travel and had a bit of fun, went and lived in the UK. So I've worked in hospitality, you know, I've worked in all of those other jobs to kind of keep this dream alive, even if it was unpaid, whether it was paid a small amount. And from that, things just start to gain momentum. And you start to kind of collect a network of all these interesting people, because film people are all interesting people. Start to introduce you to more people and more projects, and then those projects get bigger, and then you start actually earning money, which is great. And then from then, project to project, once you have your network, you start to get more and more jobs.
Was your first paid gig a direct result of having worked on a free gig?
Yes, I'd run on a bunch of things. And then from that, a producer took me onto another job where I met a first AD who actually took me onto a feature film as a second, because their second had to pull out. So I went from not having much experience to seconding a feature film, very small feature film, but that was a huge learning experience, which then started getting me interested in ADing and scheduling and all those kinds of aspects of filmmaking that you don't really think about when you're like, I want to direct.
Robbie and I were speaking in the last episode about how important interning is and volunteering, and how that quite often can lead to paid work. And so it's so interesting that that was your experience of doing a job like a director's assistant.
Definitely. And I would strongly encourage anyone who's interested in doing any part of film is do an AD job. You know, if you're on set in the AD department, you get to talk to everyone from all the different departments, because you're the communicator for everyone on set, this beacon of information, which sometimes is a little bit overwhelming, but it's also very rewarding.
That's really fantastic, Maddie. Could you actually just break down a little bit what you know about the AD department and how there's different hierarchies and what you could be doing in that role at a very entry-level position?
Yeah, so I guess the first position that you'll get when you're starting out in this industry is a runner role. Smaller productions, you might be asked to do a bit more, whereas on the really big films, you might be the costume runner or you might be the AD runner. So in my case, I started out as a runner just on kind of music videos and promos, but I really enjoyed being on set and I learned a lot. So in the AD department, you've got your first AD, who kind of is the showrunner. They kind of run the set. They're the boss. The second AD will be in the office. They may have a set of runners for themselves. They sometimes call them base bunnies because they kind of run around at unit base. And the second AD will make sure that cast will get through the works, hair and makeup and costume. You've got your third AD who's on set, who's kind of like the first AD's right-hand man, right-hand person.
Yeah, or woman, I was going to say. There's general rules to all of this, but it's always different to set. And even, you know, my experience just being over in Canada and even to LA, to Australia, the lines that blur between those roles and how they differ slightly country to country, it can differ production to production.
PA versus runner and, you know, OD PA, yeah. Camera PA, all of the above.
Yeah. So many terms, so many different team structures. Anyway, so you have your first, second, third, and then under that, you will have the AD team. So in bigger films, you might have two set PAs or set runners. You might have a cast PA or a cast runner. But the set on-set PAs or on-set AD team will kind of support the first and the third in running the floor. So they will repeat the calls. They will communicate if there's any changes that are going to happen. They'll communicate what the next shot will be. Oh, and if you're an AD, you always have to know where the toilet is because you get asked.
Where the callies are.
Where the callies are. And you also have to be really great at knowing what's for lunch. Mm. Because the crew ask.
And you should have a pocket full of sides.
Yes, pocket full of sides, pocket full of callies. And actually, it's always good to have a pocket full of snacks because you get a good reputation on set if the AD has the snack.
Or in the case of the Invisible Man, if you can always just have a pack of gum.
Yep.
That was important.
Yeah, gum and Barocca. Yeah.
A really fantastic experience for somebody starting out is even just getting on to set, if there's some kind of internship position or whatever it is, and just getting on a radio, like getting on a walkie and putting that headset in and listening to the calls that the ADs are making is such an incredible learning opportunity. And then getting the lingo and asking what things mean.
Absolutely. Everyone who wants to be in film should know how to use a radio. You use it every day. And if you're good on radio and you can speak clearly and you know what everyone is talking about, you will make a good impression.
What was something that was like either a term or a piece of protocol or something that you didn't know that you sort of learned in that horrifying way when someone has to tell you? For me, I was carrying a lighting stand the wrong way and I had a gaffer watch me do it wrong for 3 days before he finally told me. And then immediately after that, I punched it straight through a gyprock wall and twisted my ankle.
No!
I'm trying to think of a horror story. I mean, everyone knows a 10-1 versus 10-2, but you obviously never say that someone's going for a 10-2.
I have heard a gaffer use 10-2 before. And I was like, okay, all right, you go for it. Thank you.
I guess it means that you know they're going to be out for a little while longer than a 10-1.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay.
The group won't say 10-2, maybe 10-3.
For anyone who doesn't understand what we're talking about, go look up radio jargon and that's your first lesson.
And there is some great glossaries online. I'll tell the students to look up these kind of terms.
Yeah, maybe we'll put it in the show notes.
That's a great idea, yeah, because it, you know, it changes a bit country to country, but before you get on set, to have that is a really, really worthwhile thing.
Yeah, and I would definitely say that if you don't hear something clearly, either ask again, or if you've already asked and you still can't understand, ask someone else, because you never want to say copy if you haven't understood what has been communicated.
That's a really good note.
Excellent note.
Shall we jump into some of the student questions?
Definitely.
The first question is from Mitch.
Wonderful. Let me play Mitch's question.
Hey, Taylor, Robbie and Maddie. This is Mitch Bain. Thanks for taking my question. I'd love to know how Maddie got the gig.
Yeah. How did you go about this? Did you reply to an ad? How did you find out about the gig and how did you get the elusive interview?
So I was coming off Peter Rabbit 2 actually, and you start to hear a few things, and obviously I get the Inside Film emails and I also check Screen Australia website so that I know what's coming up. And I literally just sent a cold email to the production company and I was like, hey, I didn't say that, hey, I'm looking for a job. I said, hey, I'm actually really interested in doing something like producer's assistant or director's assistant. Do you have any advice as to how I could get a role like that on a film? Because I hadn't done that previously. And then the production house contacted me and said, well, actually, we need both on this film. Send us your CV. And I did.
That's so fantastic. So you didn't even sort of send a CV initially. You just reached out to them. Did you say what level of experience you'd had before?
I did kind of word it into the email that I'd had previous experience. I especially did mention that I had been an AD because that always helps because you know what's going on set, but not in much detail because I was genuinely interested how to get that kind of role because I wasn't sure who you needed to talk to or what kind of experience you would need to even get a shot at an interview, you know?
I mean, I think it speaks a little bit to the generosity of Goalpost, the production company involved, that they replied. But it's something that if you just say, are you looking for this person? Would you consider me? It's very easy to say yes or no, or to say, oh no, we're looking at other candidates. But to ask a question like that and to be genuinely interested, there's a win-win situation out of that. Yes, maybe you interview for the job, or maybe you're getting some sage advice. And I think one of the key things you mentioned in that is sending a really succinct, unassuming email. If you can be succinct and to the point and also inviting a conversation as opposed to a yes or no answer, I think that's a bit of a winning combination.
And I think another good piece of advice I could give is if you know that a film is coming into production and you know the production house or you know the producers or anyone on it that you want to contact, see if there's any like recent interviews or podcasts with them so that you have something where you can be like, oh, I heard you on this podcast. I'm really interested in this. Start a conversation rather than I want something from you. I'd really like this experience.
So there are two great pieces of advice in that. And one is, you know, establishing credibility is really important. Like, I've come off this, I've got this experience. You're also showing that you are well-researched and have the social graces, et cetera, to send a very succinct email, but also not to put it in terms of, you know, I need, I want, I'm looking for. It's something they can answer quickly. More than anything, I think it's so important to establish credibility.
You're literally mentioning, I actually give a shit about you and your company. I think we're allowed to swear on our podcast, Robbie.
We are. And you know, I've avoided it till now, but I enjoy it so much.
Okay, sorry, that you care about the company and what they're doing. And this isn't some generic email that you've sent out to every single production company producer. You've specifically emailed them. You're resonating with something they've said.
And so the other piece of advice that was embedded in that, when you're saying about listen to podcasts or read the articles or that sort of thing, is you should never be reaching out to any of these people with a question that you can Google the answer to.
100%.
Something that you could look up and they said that in an interview last week with IF or with Screen Australia, then why are you emailing them asking about it? They might have even put the call out for jobs. But if it's something you can't Google or it references something they said elsewhere, it's a really quick way of establishing credibility.
Yeah, definitely. But I love this industry so much. And I think everyone who I've come across, I'm quite lucky, also really loves the industry, and they're all willing to help you and give you advice. So I wouldn't hesitate to reach out to anyone, yeah, really, as long as you do make sure that you've got that credibility.
Yeah, the credibility is big, because there's an understanding of everyone is really, really generous, but you just have to remember that as much as everyone's super, super lovely in the industry, we're not trying to advocate that everyone right now, 100 after students, go and email every single producer.
No, don't do that.
Pick your battles. Yeah. Maddie and Taylor and Robbie told us to reach out.
One thing about that I think that's really, really valuable to consider is it's the why you and why now question again, Taylor, of this might not be the right time. But Maddie, I'm sure you could have, with that email, just as easily said, I'd like to do this job in the future. What can I be doing now to prepare me for that? Like, I might not be ready to be, you know, a producer's assistant or a director's assistant or whatever that role is. So, but here is my experience to date. What skills should I develop between now and when I get that job?
Definitely. Always upskill. Always be learning and always be developing your skills, even after you finish uni or you finish film school, because every skill that you develop will help you.
Alrighty, so once you got in the door and they've seen your CV, how did it go from there? Did you interview? What was the process like?
It was two interviews, I think. So one was a phone interview, and then I had a face-to-face interview. I thought it was going to be with Kylie, the producer, and Lee, but it was just with Lee. So I was very nervous, and I actually walked out of that interview thinking, oh, no, what have I done? I didn't get it. But yeah, I did.
Do you think there was anything in particular, like as to what it was in the room or the conversation you had that really made you stand out for that position?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I definitely had experience from a range of different departments, which gave me a very well-rounded view on production. So I'd been a producer for branded content and other video production. So I knew video from a small to a larger budget spectrum, but also I wouldn't have said this from the interview, but Lee did mention to me that I had confidence in the interview. So he was like, if there's going to be a problem on set or if something's going to go wrong, I know that having Maddie as my assistant, she'll be able to cope with that stress or that last minute change.
Mm.
And also I think we just kind of got along. Yeah.
Yeah. From an outsider's perspective, you could definitely see there was a great rapport between you and Lee, and I think film becomes a little bit of a family, and it's not just about someone who can do the job. It's whether or not you're going to get on with this person. You know, if you'll drive him nuts, driving him to and from set each day or whatever else it is.
And that is so much of the job, and so much of how you get rehired is how you are as a person. Are you going to complain when there's something difficult that comes along, or are you just going to get on with it? Because, you know, in film, like, things can go wrong. Schedule changes, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. So if you can stay cool, calm and collected, I think it definitely helps in the long run.
Yeah, I think that is a bit of a Robbie-ism, actually. Something Robbie said to me one time was, just remember to always be a good person. And that's like the most important thing. And that's exactly what you've just said, Maddie. But I think on top of that, I did just want to say, for anyone who ever goes into an interview, sometimes it can be the case of three people have interviewed, they're all perfect for the job, but it could just be in this case, you know, a relationship just works better. And so it's about finding your people. And once you do start finding your people, that's how you keep getting hired job to job, because they want to keep working with you.
Everyone who does this because they love it. We have no other choice, really. And it can be long hours and it can be very difficult, but you know, I think we recognize our own, you know, and you see in someone else that passion, and that can really carry through. But also you might have the situation of, okay, so the catering's running late and it started raining and we didn't budget for this and the KD's falling apart and this has caught fire and, you know, the whole general cluster F of production. And you want the person who's like, oh, so like a Tuesday then? Okay. Like, not the person who flips out at that, because inevitably going to be something, you know, nothing's ever a smooth ride.
Yeah, it's true. And figuring out how to maintain calm and confidence, I think, Maddie, it's a really good point and a good transferable skill, but something you definitely have to practice, I would say, and particularly the role you had. It came from having a lot of experience and practice to sort of feel confident in what you're doing, to speak for you. Shall we play the next question from Joe?
Yes, we may.
G'day guys, it's Joe Murphy here. I've got a request for Maddie. I was hoping she'd be able to talk us through a typical day in the life of a director's assistant.
Ooh.
So you've got the job. What's the day to day?
The day to day definitely changes depending whether you're in pre or on shoot or in post. In my case, I was picking Lee up from his accommodation and bringing him to wherever we were, whether it was Fox or on location, making sure he was fed and watered and had any callies or whatever he needed for the day, reminding him of what meetings, if he has any for that day, taking him to meetings with different departments. It was also a lot of diary management. So emailing everyone from every department, whether it was post, whether it was the producers in LA, whether it was the Australian producers or HODs, it was maintaining that constant communication and flexibility in his schedule so that if something were to happen that would take priority, you could kind of move it up and then communicate with the rest of the departments if you needed to move their meetings around. I think I was very lucky with Lee, so generous. So on The Invisible Man, part of what he likes to do is get food trucks for all of the casting crew. So part of my job was to organize when and where these food trucks would arrive on set, which was lots of fun because it kind of brought in that kind of management event skill.
Yeah, that was a real treat. And it was such a management task for you, because getting a food truck may sound simple, but we were shooting late nights, we were shooting out of Sydney and on location, and you were sort of coordinating and making sure we had something different and unique every single time and liaising with Lee. And this is something special that Lee was sort of organizing through you to give as a gift for the crew. And so, yeah, that generosity that came from the director, but then facilitating those kind of ideas and visions is really important.
Definitely. I guess the main priority day to day was managing Lee's schedule, because that is such a massive part of being an assistant. You go home and then Lee would work after I drop him home. So if something popped up that was unexpected, or if a meeting ran over, that you could communicate that with heads of departments or the producers to make sure that things were still working smoothly. And it's not an easy task, I have to say, because things change so quickly and everyone wants the director's attention and everyone has a question for him. So, you know, whether you have to field a question or just say, you know, Lee will get back to you in a few hours, or just hold tight for a second, it's not easy to do on a multi-department level.
100%. Plus you're in a bit of a privileged position, and this is the awesome thing about the role, particularly for you, is you would quite often be in those meetings with Lee. So you're there listening to everything that's going on, absorbing his notes and the conversations he's having, and then being the one to go, okay, now how does this change everything we have on the plate so far? What information do I now need to pass on to important people?
Absolutely. And I'm not sure whether that's the same on every DA position, but Lee was very generous with his time and allowing me to come into these meetings. So yes, I would sit in on HOD meetings, post meetings, stunt rehearsals, anything. And so you were kind of like a sponge. You'd hear all these conversations and be like, okay, I'm putting that at the back of my brain here. I don't know when I'm going to need to use it, but I might need to use it later down the track.
Probably all your AD work as well would have helped you recognize the importance of being in those conversations, I can imagine.
Yeah, definitely, because some of the HODs or some of the crew members would come to me for questions rather than going to Lee, because if Lee had to answer every single question, there's not enough time in the day.
So when it's simple things, a recheck, or it's someone else in the department, it's about keeping that level of communication alive.
Yeah.
All those departments won't necessarily speak to one another, but they will all speak to the director. So you have to know, oh, wait, actually, these people need to know about this, because that's a downstream knock-on effect.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's definitely how my experience as an AD helped, because I kind of had already an overview of what every department role and who did what. So I knew who to ask if I had a question that needed answering. And I knew who to contact if Lee had a question for someone in the department.
Yeah, it becomes a shortcut. I mean, what's interesting in having this conversation, there's communication happening 24/7, in pre particularly, and on set. So there's a lot of lines of communication that's already happening. But really what you're being, Maddie, is you're catching anything. You're catching little things that somebody might have missed something in a meeting. And you can just give that. You can pass that note on. It's not like you're being relied on to instruct the crew on what to do in any kind of way. That's not the role. But the reason why you will be successful in that role is because you are catching everything, and so you can help repeat information back.
Yep, and that's why it's always important to be a nice person, because if you get along with everyone, you know, you're going to have people trust you with information.
Turn up on time, don't be a jerk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the key ones.
Turn up before your call time.
Yeah.
Yes, early is on time is late.
Correct.
Yet another Robbieism that the year threes will be sick of hearing by now. And until you repeat it back to me, I'm going to keep saying it. So actually, just before we get to Menachem's question, I had one that I wanted to ask. At what point did you reveal your own ambitions to be a director?
In the interview.
Great.
Yeah, in the interview, Lee actually said he'd love it if he could have a director's assistant who was an aspiring director, because he believed that it was a really great position for someone to learn. And it was, I have to say, it's the best job that I've ever had, because you are a fly on the wall for everything, right from pre all the way in. I wasn't into post too much, but I was still there, and I was privileged enough to see some of the assembly edits. Lee was very generous with his time, but I definitely wanted to say, yes, that's my aspiration and that's why I want to be here. And I think he saw the passion that I had for this whole world of film.
Terrific. So, Menachem's question.
I was wondering what your take is on the overlap between your role and the roles of the producers, the first AD and the director.
Yeah, so being a DA, again, you're kind of a hub of communication. And I started in pre, so there's limited crew. So I worked with Deb, who was our first AD, in scheduling Lee's meetings. And I also spoke to Kylie and Bea, who were the producers on site, in making sure that Lee was getting enough time with the people that he needed to be with to make those decisions.
Yeah, and then in like the other people you'd have contact with, like, you know, you and I were sitting next to each other. I was working with the producers as their assistant. You were working with Lee as their assistant. And it meant that you and I could cross notes across the table, which was always really brilliant.
It was the best.
I think what's really nice is when you can have somebody like you nearby in the office who you can sort of trade those notes with and help each other out. And it's not like there was anything confidential that we were passing between each other. There could be crossover. And sometimes we would find that we would be helping each other with tasks.
Definitely.
Which could be really fantastic.
And to be honest, like, I don't have a background in production of films. I've had experience producing like smaller budget videos, but not films. So it was great to sit next to you, Taylor, and kind of listen to what was happening, because, you know, things like the contracts and all of that kind of extra production talk was relatively new for me. So it was awesome.
Yeah. And I think what happened is, you know, you're on this long chain. So, you know, I'm next to you, you're right in front of Lee, and I've got the producer in front of me and then the line producer on one side. And that cross-pollination of work sort of in conversations flow into each other. And you can, once you start hearing all the other things that are going on, it's important that you don't just stay siloed. You get to listen to how things are affecting each part of it.
Yeah.
Shall we punch into Holly's question?
Yes, indeed.
Hi, Maddie. My name's Holly Treneman. I was just wondering how creative the role of a director's assistant is and how creatively involved you were.
Hi, Holly. I think it really depends on what production you're working on. it's not a creative role. It's more of a logistics role, but it definitely is not boring, and it's definitely full of information and inspiration.
The creativity that you absorb and the learning you get is insane, but you have to be practical and logistic to facilitate that role. And it's like, no, you're not going to be making this feature film. You're the director's assistant. They are making the film and you're facilitating them doing that. But the opportunity of being in that role and what you'll get in terms of inspiration, what you'll get in terms of learning is huge.
Yeah.
I think it's such an important balance. It's such a logistics heavy role, and it's almost like you were the sort of the unicorn for this particular role because you suited Lee perfectly, but you also had the AD and logistics experience. And those two things, you know, would have to be in balance to make you as effective at that role as you obviously were.
Definitely. And I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat the role. Like when I was on set, a lot of it is just making sure that the director is having a good time on set, because the lesser worries or concerns he has, the better off he's going to be in trying to create his vision and the film. So I think I went through about 5 water bottles with him because he just seemed to lose them, even though I was like hawk watching those water bottles. Having the gum, having the snacks that he liked, making sure that he was comfortable, that he had his jacket when we were shooting at night. It's just simple things to make their life easier. That's your role.
Okay, so Jamie's question now.
Hi Maddie, it's Jamie from third year. I was wondering if the director will ever ask your input on anything more creative, and how much they want that creative input versus how much of the role is regular assisting work.
Thanks, Jamie. I think I was very lucky in this situation to even be asked for my opinion on certain things. I wouldn't say that there's much creative input, if any. I mean, I would say the creativity comes with being a sounding board. In my case, Lee, he was trusting enough to be like, hey, what do you think about this idea? And I'd say, oh, yes, or don't know about that one. Definitely didn't say, oh, don't know about that one until later in the film when we were friends.
If you are lucky enough and privileged enough to be asked an opinion, remember that that's a privilege and you wait to be asked. The director's assistant is not like mini director and that you're stepping on set to provide a whole bunch more creative notes.
You're not the director when the director's not there?
Definitely not.
Here's my little failure. One time I presumed to know what the director wanted for a particular short film I was producing. And I don't think I've had a worse telling off in my career. Actually, no, they were very good about it. But it was a real note to me to go, there is a director for a reason, and don't presume, you know, or don't make some kind of judgment call for them. And I doubt you made that mistake, Maddie, but that would definitely be probably the biggest faux pas you could make in assuming you are a representative of the director.
You're there to make the director's life easier. But in saying that, what a sick job.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get to be on set every day, watch magic happen.
Literally, this conversation is making me a little bit antsy, like, oh, I want to get back into production.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, when's the next one?
Okay, do you want to play Menachem's question now?
Hi, Maddie. My name is Menachem Spielman. Lee Whannell's directing style is quite technical. Did that make your job clearer and easier, or did it mean more tedious things to keep track of? Or did you perhaps find it more open and creative despite the technical way that it comes across on screen?
Hey, Menachem, thanks for your question. I probably wouldn't say that Lee's directing style affected my role, but I guess I would say with this film, there were a set of kind of technical challenges. We used a MoCam to track some of our stunt scenes, so that added an extra element to our shoot.
Probably for both Maddie and I, what was really fantastic is this film offered opportunities that you wouldn't always get on set. So whether it was working with lots of stunts or working with driving chase sequences or working with the robotic camera, the MoCam, you know, which is a particular style of Lee's that he's used in his films, it just means that you get to take away a lot more things. But logistically, it's still a film and there's still the director's work to organise and the producer's work to organise. So
I think Mitch's question sounds great.
Okay, so let's have Mitch's question.
This is Mitch Bain. I would just love to know if there are any specific skills or programs or apps that we should be learning in order to work in a similar role like Maddie did. Thanks.
Ooh, know a calendar really well, I would say. So I use Google Cal, and I would put Lee's appointments in there. What else? InDesign. Occasionally, I would make up documents with Lee's reference photos for the HODs. So InDesign was very helpful to make it look nice.
You made this beautiful little booklet that they printed out in glossy print that then all the crew had as sort of a reference point, but it's not something you slapped together in Word. You went through and really carefully put that all together aesthetically in InDesign. Go and find a tutorial online and do it. You don't need to go and do a specific study in it.
Yeah, and even Canva is a really great resource if you don't know InDesign, because they have some really great templates there that you can use. I would also say Excel. I don't think I had to use too many Excel skills in this role, but it's definitely good to have for your budgeting, or even like me putting together a rough budget for one of Lee's food trucks, for example. It's just a good skill to have.
I'll throw in there a really, really great app that I got on about a year ago that I use it almost every day, called Synchronize, which is a stackable world clock that is really, really useful because you can scroll through at the bottom and it'll change the time in every time zone you've chosen to stack. So you can figure out, oh, if I need to do a meeting between Sydney, LA, New York and London, what's the 1 hour sliver of time that's actually going to be not insane for everyone?
It's a great idea.
Is there any other apps?
No, but I'm going to go and say something old school here. And I would say always have a notebook and a pen on you, because, you know, sometimes I don't want to get my phone out and have to go into think. I'd have a list of everything that I had to put in a calendar, or if there was something I wanted to write down, always have a notepad and pen. Always.
Have several pens in your pocket.
Oh, yeah. And always wear clothing with pockets. I know that might sound dumb, but particularly sometimes for women that have pants that have pretend pockets, very important. But the other thing I just wanted to give a shout out for was Pearl, our directing lecturer at Afters, made this suggestion of this notebook called Rocket Book. And I'm not trying to do some kind of paid sponsored advertisement here, but I really love it because it's like this notebook that you can write on and then wash it away. So it's environmentally friendly. You keep using it over and over again, and you can scan your notes to your computer. I'm obsessed with it, but the one thing I just wanted to say was the reason you have a notebook instead of a pen is you can't turn your phone light on when you're on set often. You can't have your phone sort of nearby you on set often. And also it looks incredibly rude, and sometimes people could get paranoid if you're playing on your phone during a confidential or sensitive meeting. So you still have to find your notepad, if that's low tech or high tech, like the one I'm obsessed with right now.
And yes. Wear a watch.
Yes, yeah. Wear a watch. In fact, wear a Fitbit so that you can track your steps, because I can assure you that you'll be walking many steps on set.
Yes, and to that point, comfortable shoes.
Very. Blunnies. This is not a paid thing either. Get a pair of Blundstones, but weatherproof.
I will also give a shout out to, and this is incredibly lame, but Skechers Shape Ups are pretty damn comfy.
Alrighty, all of the top tips heard here first. The other thing, I mean, I think that was really an important part of your role, Maddie, was you kept Lee's iPad up to date, and that was using Google Drive. But I think those are the little things, understanding the tech and knowing how to troubleshoot, I think is always really important. There'll always be some kind of production specific software that you'll encounter, but as soon as you know what it is, I think it's such a valuable idea to learn it inside out. So you can be the person to troubleshoot things when the tech goes haywire, for instance.
Yeah, definitely. Often you'll get a script amendment come through just to have that up to date, have reference photos on hand, because, you know, beautiful iPad screen, you can just get a whiff of inspiration from it. It's definitely something beneficial.
Yeah, totally. Was there anything different to what you had expected before you took on this role?
No, I went into it knowing that it wasn't necessarily going to be anything glamorous. I went into it wanting to learn, really. I think the AD training really helps, because you know that some nights on set are not going to be that fun when it's the middle of winter and you're shooting outside, but I would never regret working on the production at all. It was the best.
Yeah, 100%. Alrighty. So I think that's probably all we have time for before we wrap up. Robbie, do you have any ideas on like a nice little wrap-up question?
Yeah, I would, because we often ask each other when we end these things, you know, what we've been watching and what is like a takeaway for the students. So I suppose I would just ask you, like, what would you most like to tell the you that finished film school?
Just keep going. Just keep going. Because eventually, if you're a good person and you work hard and you pick up things quickly, you're going to make a name for yourself. just keep going and also learn how to use a radio properly.
Good one. Thank you so much, Maddie. This has been incredible.
Absolute delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Afters Lockdown podcast. Check the show notes for credits and links.